Welcome to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hemming, and this is the show where we try and make sense of the nonsense that is Brexit. This week we've got a very special guest. It's Martin Conway, who is Head of Psychology at City University in London and Director for the Centre of Memory and Law. So I think in tabloid parlance we might say he is a little bit of a boffin. Martin's on to talk about flashbulb memories, which if you haven't heard, all will be explained in the interview. The interview goes on for about 20 minutes and we would love to hear your feedback, and we'd also love for you to suggest some other guests to come on the show as well. So you can find us at brexitpodcast.com on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram, and like I say, we would love to hear your feedback. But without further ado, I shall pop on the interview now.
Well, I'd like to welcome our next guest. He's the Head of Psychology at City University in London, Director at the Centre for Memory and Law, and he's been conducting a flashbulb memory research into the Brexit result. Welcome, Professor Martin Conway.
Thank you.
So, look, I guess the first question, Martin, what is flashbulb memory research?
Good question. An area of great controversy, actually. But basically, what it's about is looking at people's memories for what we might call a reception event. So the event in which they first learned of some surprising item, usually of national or international news. And it's very rare for people to remember where they were and what they were doing, their personal circumstances, the reception event, when they first learnt of an item of public news. There are very few memories we have which are like that. So there are lots of news items we know, but we can't remember what the circumstances were under which we learnt them. So we refer to the few events that lead to people forming memories where they remember the actual moment when they learnt of the news event, where they were, who they were, sometimes other very distinctive details, as flashbulb memories.
I understand. And so why do you do it?
Well, we're interested in, the memory research is obviously, and we're interested in any sort of strange types of memories that seem to be out there, because they may be revealing to us about how memory works. And the original proposal was, this was many years ago, that there was a special brain mechanism that operated when one of these highly consequential, surprising, emotional events occurred. We now know that's almost certainly not the case. On the other hand, there must be something going on in the brain that responds to events of this sort and creates, you know, these highly durable, detailed memories for news events that we don't usually remember in any case.
I understand. Do you feel that you're making progress? And see, the brain's are kind of a bit of a mystery to most of us, very powerful tool there. Do you think you're making progress in this area?
Absolutely. The biggest change, I would say, in psychology over the past 25 years has been the emergence of an ability to scan what's going on in the brain as it's happening. It's called neuroimaging, and we now have really a much more extensive understanding of what occurs in the brain when people remember.
Okay. So flashbulb memories, can they be relied upon?
Well, that is an interesting question. Can any memory be relied upon?
Yeah, sure.
Well, the answer is probably not. There's plenty of research showing that flashbulb memories have forgotten details. Some memory shows that they have mistaken details. So in that respect, they're rather like other memories.
But with flashbulb memories being so strong, would they potentially become, if they were wrong, would they potentially become more ingrained and be more hardened to that misrepresentation of what really happened?
Yes, I think, you know, once we've kind of got the knowledge in there, and even if it's wrong, it's in your long-term memory, and it's unlikely to change unless by chance you encounter some falsifying detail. Let me give you an example. a barrister once told me about how he remembered vividly his father sort of talking to him on the phone when his brother was being born. He was talking to his mother in hospital while the brother was being born. He was a very little boy, getting very agitated. And the father started talking to him about the moon landings because he knew he was interested. He was just a little boy at the time. And it was only years later that he realised his brother had been born in 1968, which is 1 year before the moon landing. But the point I want to make about this, which I think makes it even more interesting in some respects, is that didn't mean to say that when he thought about this memory, he no longer experienced it as a memory. He did. Yeah. He continued to experience it as a memory. So even though he knew it had to be wrong, it was probably some compilation of different sorts of memories or interactions with his father in different situations. But even if he knew it was wrong, he still experienced it as a memory. That's my point.
I see. So before we move on to the current Brexit research that you're undertaking, can you give us some previous examples
of other sorts of flashbulb memory studies?
Yes.
It really started out with a study of the assassination of the American President John F. Kennedy, which took place in the 1960s. And there was a famous paper done in the 1970s following up on an interview that was done in the American magazine Esquire, where a bunch of celebrities were asked around about 10 years later whether they remembered Kennedy's assassination. And they all did. And people would say, well, I was out on the golf course with my friend Ted. I know just on a ninth hole and things like this. It's very specific, detailed memories. And so these two researchers, Roger Brown and James Kulik, followed that up in a more formal kind of questionnaire survey of that event and several other events. So they showed, for example, that the assassination of Martin Luther King was associated with these flashbulb memories, but more so amongst Black Americans and white Americans. So one of the things about flashbulb memories is, and this relates to our Brexit study, is they tend to occur for groups where they're self-relevant.
Yeah, it's more pertinent to those people.
That's right.
What were some of the earlier studies, were there any findings that came out of it that that we should pick up on? So the JFK one, for example, was there something that came out of that one?
Yeah, well, that's where the original idea of flashbulb memories came from, and the whole idea there was some special brain mechanism, which we now believe not to be true, or at least not true in the way it was expressed in that paper. There were also subsequent studies. We did a big study for people's memories for Thatcher's resignation, and that was a cross-national study, and we found that amongst English people, there was a high degree of prevalence of these flashbulb memories, whereas in other countries, there wasn't. And that kind of illustrates further this point that the relevance of an event to a particular group, in this case a nation, causes widespread flashbulb memory formation, or it doesn't if it's not that relevant.
I see. It's very interesting. So Brexit seemed quite an obvious one to do, I suppose, for you.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, I have to say, it wasn't my idea. It was my research assistant's idea. She came in very excited the following day, really, and said, why don't you do a Brexit study? And I thought that was a good idea. So we got together with a bunch of international collaborators across Europe, and really we were focused on European countries.
Yes.
Put together one of these questionnaires, which simply asks you about your personal circumstances, who were you with, what were you doing, are there any other details you can remember? People can remember often remarkable details. So, for example, in the original flashbulb memory study, one person remembered the brand of a cigarette packet they'd just thrown in a bin. And that was, of course, 15 years earlier.
Right, and everywhere. Yeah. Having smoking all the cigarettes in a 10-minute period because they were so stressed from hearing the news.
quite possibly. So we've now collected memories in England. What else we've done? We've done Italy, Greece, Denmark. I haven't got the full list of countries with me. I mean, several others as well. I think we're doing Romania at the moment. So we've done Portugal, Spain, and France.
Do you hope to do all 23 states?
We've done them all, actually.
Yeah.
So what we're doing these studies is you try to collect people's memories within, let's say, 2 to 4 weeks of the event happening. And then you come back to them about a year later and ask them again to try to recall their memory. of where they were and what they were doing, etc., etc. Or you might even ask them, do you still have a memory of this event? And that's going to be the crucial test, because our prediction is, of course, that Brexit will be much more significant to people in England than it is to these other European countries. But it will vary with the other European countries. It might be more significant to French and Italian people than it is to, for example, Danish people. And within England, we're quite interested in whether you were for or against. So we've got that information from each of our respondents.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting question. If you were perhaps for staying in Europe, you might find the fact that we voted to go out so distressing that you've kind of repressed the memory, and so you don't have a flashbulb memory. Where if you were for leaving, then maybe that's a joyous moment for you. You've won the day, and that positive emotion makes sure the event stays with you, the memory of the event stays with you.
What size are the samples on a study like this?
We've got about, I think, five or 600 English people, and then about, on average, it varies, but on average about 300 people in the other countries are sampled.
Okay.
So quite a reasonable sample size, really.
And do you ask fairly leading questions, or do you leave it quite open?
We ask them for a free description. We just say, do you remember your personal circumstances when you learned about the news of Brexit? And then they write a little paragraph about that. And then we have a set of standard questions we ask them, what source did you hear it from? Who were you with? What were you doing? Where were you? And a whole bunch of other, kind of event-related details, about eight of them, in fact. Mm. So we can look at specific answers to specific pros, but we can also look at that free description and see whether that changes over time.
And have you got, can you share any insights with us already? Have you seen a trend or any patterns emerging?
No, we've only just got the data in, really, so it's gonna be a while. We'll probably start analysing it this autumn, but it's not until we get the second wave of data in a year's time that we'll be in a position to say much about flashbulb memories.
Okay. So just going to put you on the spot then for a second. Mm. What would your flashbulb memory be of that day?
Do you know what? I haven't actually got one.
Okay. Okay.
And I was for staying in. So.
Yes. Okay.
Actually, I do have a memory related to it. It wasn't actually for hearing the news. I had to go and have some physio the Friday morning, I think. And they had a big TV screen on in the waiting room, and all the news was on then. I'd already heard the news on the radio, but that's when I really remember most watching it. So maybe I do have a flashbulb memory.
Yeah, I think my flashbulb memory was I left work very late the night before from the news desk where I work at News UK, and one of the senior editors had come in saying, it's all a done deal, we're definitely going to remain. I think Farage had just come out at that point and said that we were going to remain. So then I went to bed thinking that was going to be the case. And then when I woke up, it was to a fairly irate flatmate who was absolutely gutted because we'd voted to leave. So it was a bit of a shock. So it's pretty crystal clear for me.
Well, it's a shame in our study, but it's a bit late now. So we might do another study. I don't know, maybe when we do the retest phase, we might then sample a whole load of new people as well. Just to see whether there's a persistent memory.
Yeah. Do you have any perceived views on how it may come out? Do you feel, for example, that you might have the young voters or young predominantly Remain voters feeling that that the sort of older generation who voted to leave have mucked things up for them or something like that?
We don't really have questions that address that issue. We do have questions actually about the event itself, which might be quite interesting. Like what was the percentage, for and leave?
Yes.
And it'd be interesting to see, someone might have a flashbulb memory for learning about the event, but still not remember the event itself correctly.
I see. Yeah. And sometimes on huge announcements or something like this, people can find themselves really emotionally touched by it. do you find then when they have more of an emotional reaction, as for example, somebody may burst into tears or can't quite understand where all of that's coming from, do you find that sort of hardens and crystallizes the fact that they'll then have a flashbulb memory, a very clear one when they look back?
Well, we're certainly looking at emotion in this study, and we look at the valence of the emotion, how positive, how negative it was, and we also look at how intense it was in response to learning the news. As regards doing the actual study, people seem to really rather enjoy it. We've had some very positive and enthusiastic feedback. So people like to tell you about, as a memory researcher found over the years, people like to tell you about their memories, even when they're negative.
Yeah, and I was going to say, so on the past events, if the results haven't come out from this one yet, but on past studies, are people more keen, or do people have stronger memories when it is negative or positive, or where's the split lie with that? How are we as a society?
Well, that's a particularly interesting question, actually, Tim, because most of these flashbulb memory events are pretty negative.
Yes.
And this is an unusual event in that it's split down the middle. For half the people, it seems to be positive, and half the people, it seems to be negative. So no one's ever really been able to make that contrast before. And so this study will allow us to do that. So if you want to come back and ask me next year, I'll tell you.
Okay. And then just in terms of doing the studies fairly close to the event and then doing it a year later, can you kind of just explain why you have that year's gap and then what differences you potentially might see?
Right. Well, the reason for putting a retention interval in there, it doesn't have to be, will be roughly a year, is that we want to see how durable these memories are, because that's thought to be one of the features of these flashbulb memories. So if you've got a flashbulb memory, then we would expect it to be pretty much the same when you recount it to us a year after the event, you know, compared to what the account you gave us 2 weeks after the event.
Mm.
So that's why we have that kind of, it's like a consistency check, if you want. So that's why that's in there. What we might expect to happen is amongst those people who initially have very detailed memories, but they're not flashbulb memories, then a sign of that will be when they're tested a year later, they won't recall as much information. And often what they do is they recall erroneous information.
Hmm. Yes, so, I see.
There was a famous study of the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, a flashbulb memory study of that. And what people found there was the emergence of what they call TV focus.
Mm.
Over the period of testing, which is over a period of 3 years in that case, memory shifted from having learnt about that news, let's say from a friend or seen it in a newspaper or heard it on the radio, to claiming to have seen it on television.
Yes.
And that's probably because that newsreel of the spaceship blowing up was shown so frequently at the time on television.
Mm. So just in flashbulb memories in general, nowadays we're bombarded with more media and just an assault on the senses like never before.
Mm.
Is that impacting our memory as a whole? Is that impacting our flashbulb memories?
No, I don't think it is, actually. I mean, actually, I spoke to some journalists about this just the other week. I mean, our memories remain pretty much the same as they always were. What we're supremely good at as a species is developing systems that enhance our cognitive abilities and our physical abilities. So although there's far more information around these days and it's much easier to get your hands on it, that doesn't impact in a negative way on the capacity and quality of your memory. But what it does impact upon, I think, is your anxiety level. And I think the amount of information that's out there is making people feel kind of more anxious when they're going around doing their jobs, etc.
Because being overwhelmed, I suppose, is something that comes in with anxiety.
Yes, that's right. So someone says, I'm just overwhelmed by all of this, you know, then what they're really saying is, I'm pretty anxious about it. It's causing me negative feelings.
Yeah.
So it's not really one's abilities to think and memorize and solve problems, etc. It's more to do with one's emotional reaction to it. And my therapeutic advice is cheer up and look on the plus side. 15 years ago, we couldn't possibly have got all the information we get today when we need it. And
yeah.
That's good.
And do you think the things that you're learning about the mind ultimately can help with things like, I guess, the battle against Alzheimer's and dementia and those type of things? Is it was that somewhere that you'd like it to lead?
Yes, that's exactly where we like to go. And we don't just do flashbulb memory work. We do lots and lots of different memory work. A lot of it with patients, brain damaged patients, patients with psychological illnesses, and with the elderly, both healthily and with pathological aging. And so what we're doing by doing all of these different types of research is trying to kind of home in from different angles on memory deficits. And as we get to understand them, try to figure out how we can ameliorate them.
I see. You think you've just returned from the sixth international conference on memories in Budapest, is that correct?
That's right, yeah, I organised this actually.
Oh, excellent. Do you, anecdotally, find that professors such as yourself tend to have a better memory because you work all the time in this field?
Sadly, if only that was true. That's my memory is just the same as everybody else's at my age. So.
And just moving ahead, can you see any other studies similar on the horizon? Is there any others that you'd really like to tackle?
Well, in terms of these memories of public events?
Yes.
They're serendipitous, you know. You just have to wait for something to happen, if that's what you want to look at. I mean, there are other systematic ways to look at people's memories of public events. But it turns out people have quite good memories of public events, but they don't have good memories for how they learnt about those public events.
Yes, I think. Okay. Yeah, I think we're nearly through. Thank you very much, Martin. Is there anything else that you would like to share or get across?
No, but if your listeners want to join in the Brexit study, get them to have a look at my website about this time next year, and we'll have it open again.
Okay, and where should they go online for that?
Just go to Martin Conway at Department of Psychology, City University, and I'll make sure we get something up on our webpage, probably around about, I would have thought, by Easter time next year.
Excellent. Thanks very much again, Martin.
Thank you. Pleasure talking to you.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
That's about it for this week. Thanks very much for tuning in. Don't forget you can leave your thoughts with us on brexitpodcast.com, on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. We hope you remain with us for our next episode. But until that time, I will take my leave. The Brexit Podcast.